I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. We do have a quorum present. Representative Olson, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes from the April 9th meeting.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. I do want to announce there is a going to be a change in the agenda. We're going to take the Transportation Finance Bill first, and then for processing purposes, we need to take the Jobs Bill, which you'll notice that I had at the end of the agenda, so we'll move that to number two. And that was returned to us and referred to us this morning from the Tax Committee. So with that, we have Representative Hornstein prepared to present the Transportation Bill. And Representative Hornstein, do you have a motion?
Yes, I move adoption of the Transportation Finance and Policy Development Report for House File 1555.
Okay, the motion is before us to adopt the division report. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Hornstein, another motion?
Yes, I would move that House File 1555 as amended be recommended to be referred to the Tax Committee.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Hornstein, there is an amendment. Would you like to take the amendment up now?
Mr. Chairman, what was the motion to go where?
Tax.
Oh, that's okay, yeah.
I didn't hear what you said.
The motion is that the bill is amended. House File 1555 is amended be recommended to be referred to the Tax Committee.
So you needed to repeat the motion. Yeah.
Okay. So, members, I just did have an author's amendment. If, Mr. Chair, we could consider that. The A19-0445. It just makes a number of technical changes to the bill in terms of some appropriations and effective dates, the main one having to deal with the airport fund. And Mr. Lee can very briefly go over that for the committee from House Fiscal.
Okay, Mr. Lee, welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, Andrew Lee from House Fiscal staff. If you look at the amendment, the A19-0445, lines 1.3 through 1.9 are adjusting totals. This is largely technical, but also reflects a change further in the amendment. Then line 1.10 and 1.11 lowers the airport or aeronautics airport development assistance appropriation. This would bring the bill in line with the revised governor's recommendation on that level of spending for airports. And then on line 1.12 of the amendment increases the appropriation from the general fund for active transportation by $115,000. This would bring the bill to the target amount for that the Ways and Means Committee has set for transportation. Then lines 1.13 through 1.18 are amending totals for agencies, and then lines 1.19 through 1.22 push out effective dates for filing fee increases that both DVS and the deputy registrars receive in Article 3.
Okay, any discussion on the author's amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Hornstein, if you could give us the highlights of the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. So House File 1555 is the transportation finance bill for this session. And there's several articles, I think, that would be of particular interest to the Ways and Means Committee. Article 1, the general pro forma transportation appropriations for MnDOT, the Met Council, the Department of Public Safety, and Article 2 deals with transportation bonds. That's the trunk highway bonding program that we deal with on a biennial basis, also for MnDOT. I just want to spend a little bit more time on Article 3. I think that's a new finance provisions that we haven't seen in this bill for some time. It's titled Transportation-Related Taxes and Fees, and I think that would probably be of most interest at this point. So I wanted to just talk briefly about that article. We include in this section the fee on motor fuel that goes up one nickel per year over the next 4 years. That is meant to align the revenue with the stated and agreed upon needs that MnDOT has for constitutionally dedicated funding for roads and bridges. We also increase the license tab fees as well in this section. That is done in a way that I feel is fair and progressive. Those that are purchasing new, very high-value vehicles will see a rise in their registration fees. Those Minnesotans, and it is most Minnesotans, who own vehicles that are 11 years and older will actually get a decrease in their license tab fees under this bill. That accomplishes most of what we need to do for road and bridge funding. In terms of public transportation, we have a couple of provisions, I think, again, that would be of interest to this committee. One is a half-cent sales tax increase in the metro area to fund transit and roads, primarily transit, but there is road money included in that provision for the metro area. We also increased the motor vehicle sales tax from 6.5% to 6.875%, and that aligns the motor vehicle sales tax with the broader rate of sales tax in the state. That increases revenue, and we are able to use that for greater Minnesota transit purposes. And we also have a change in the funding formula. In 2006, we had a constitutional amendment that dedicated MVEST for transportation, the MVEST, the motor vehicle sales tax, for transportation purposes. We have 57% for roads, 43% for transit. But since we're increasing the overall MVEST tax rate, there is an increase in road funding under that provision, as well as, of course, transit funding. So, you know, those are the main highlights of the bill. We have a potpourri of different items that relate to naming bridges and various other kinds of provisions. But I think those three are the most interest to the Ways and Means Committee. We have money for deputy registrars, $10 million. We also have an increase in fees that deputy registrars can collect to take care of their additional expenses as they move forward with changes in our license and the MNLAR system, the license and registration system. So that's my very broad overview, but I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay, that's fine, and we have Representative Torkelson on the list. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I forget, I'd like to request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
On the vote on this bill. I'd like to thank Chair Hornstein for his hard work. We've had a good committee. He has adopted some provisions in this bill that have been suggested by Republicans, and I do appreciate that. But overall, the bill is very unpleasant. This ambitious transportation bill is really a shift to reverse for motorists, and makes Minnesota one expensive place to drive. The gas tax increases by 70% over 3 years and then piles on top of that with ever-rising gas taxes on autopilot. With every added nickel paid by drivers who buy fuel in Minnesota, it would make us the fourth highest gas tax state in the nation. Registration fees will be dramatically higher, picking the pockets of car buyers. In most cases, this will result in increased fees of over $1,000 over the life of the vehicle, and if you have a more expensive vehicle, even more than that. Vehicle purchases will also be subject to additional sales tax, as that rate moves from 6.5%, as Chair Hornstein said, to 6.85%. Finally, the fees paid for transactions related to registration, titling, and licensing are all increased. All of these added costs fall directly on Minnesota motorists, again, making Minnesota one expensive place to drive. You might think that would be enough, but there is more. The bill adds an additional half-cent sales tax on the seven-county metro area, with the annual revenue of $290 million going to Met Council and the Metropolitan Transit Advisory Board. All of this taxing adds up to nearly $1.5 billion in the 2021 biennium and $2.4 billion in the 22-23 biennium. Representative Hornstein also mentioned the change in the MVEST distribution. I can remember when we passed that constitutional amendment that has some rather unusual wording in it that requires no more than 60% of that go to roads and at least 40% of that go to transit. Since that's stayed constant since 2006, and now we are taking a bigger bite for transit, meaning a smaller bite goes to our roads and bridges. Where does all this revenue go? The first 7.5 cents of new gas tax is spent just to replace the sales tax revenues that were budgeted for transportation, and instead will become part of the bloated general fund. The working family tax credit is not in this bill, but it's been directly tied to the increase in the impact of increased gas taxes on working families. That additional cost means that another 2 cents or so of our gas tax is really going to fill other pots. What's left will go to transportation, and it looks good, but we know that support for the gas tax is waning. Even the governor, in his recent remarks, indicated it's one of those things that he might negotiate on. As the proposed amount of revenue goes down, the amount of money left for transportation goes down. This bill really is a bit of a shift in gimmick. Revenue that we thought would be going to transportation is going elsewhere. The cost of driving is going up dramatically for all motorists who drive in the state of Minnesota. Mr. Chair, this is really a disappointment.
Representative Hornstein, do you want to respond?
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson for your comments. And I just wanted to respond to a couple of statements here. You know, Minnesota is already an expensive place to drive, and this is actually going to help us be less expensive. Why? Because Minnesotans are paying $1,000 in what we call a congestion tax. This is money that Minnesotans are losing in lost productivity due to wasting time in traffic. They're wasting gasoline in traffic, and they are paying sometimes $200-$300 a year to repair their cars because they're getting damaged in potholes. We just had a situation on I-94 where 14 people had damaged tires in a period of just a few minutes when a pothole opened up in the middle of I-94 on a weekday. And that's an example of unexpected expenses that Minnesotans are paying because of the state of our really crumbling infrastructure, which the Society of Civil Engineers, the nonpartisan Society of Civil Engineers, has rated a D plus grade for our road and bridge infrastructure. That's what's costing Minnesotans money. And this is what this bill will attempt, and I think successfully attempts, to reconcile, because much of this money that we're spending is going to simply maintain our 50-year-old road and bridge infrastructure, in addition to I think, some very important expansion that we can accomplish through the increased fee on motor fuels, as well as the money that we appropriate for the trunk highway bonds. And let's be clear, the $2 million in trunk highway bonds would not really possible if we were not getting additional revenue from the fuels tax, because if you can imagine this bond program being a credit card, we are at the limit of our credit card. And we don't do what the federal government does. We don't have a continuing resolution to raise the debt. Here in Minnesota, we live within our means. And so if we are to be able to access bonds, we're going to have additional revenue. I would also note that the gas, the price of gas has gone up 60 cents in some parts of the state over the last 6 months. And that money isn't going to fix roads and bridges in Minnesota. That money is primarily going to a whole host of folks along the supply line for oil. Some of it is, of course, very legitimate profit expenses and expenses for R&D and transportation and, of course, profits. But some of it goes to speculators and these big oil companies. And we're not seeing any results. We're not seeing any improvement on our infrastructure from that 50, 60 cents that Minnesotans are have been paying in an increased cost for gasoline over the last few months. So this is a modest 5 cent per year increase that stays in the state, that stays in our communities and funds roads and bridges in our state's constitution. And finally, Mr. Chair, I do want to address the issue, and I know that Representative Torkelson has concerns about the very slight change in the formula that we have on MVEST. You know, the fact that we're increasing MVEST slightly, the tax from 6.5 to 6.875, will actually increase the amount of money that goes to roads. It's not a cut in road money. And we need money for public transportation throughout the state. We have 720,000 people will move into the metro area in the next 20 years. We don't have capacity to expand roads in the metro area. We'll do some of that, but we need to have a first-rate public transit system to accommodate the growth in our region. And, of course, there are many many uses for the money for this metro sales tax. This is going to go to improve our bus service, which I think needs help. We need more frequent bus service. We need better bus infrastructure. That's where the sales tax is going to go. So I feel it's very important to understand that we already have tremendous expenses when it comes to our road maintenance and infrastructure. This will actually, in the long term and in the immediate term, reduce what Minnesotans are paying to get around the state.
Okay, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, could you explain to me a little bit how you came up with this $1,000 of expense per household on the road?
That's a report from the Texas Transportation Institute, which has, over the years, had a number of different rubrics and inputs in terms of coming up with costs, external costs to families in terms of dealing with the transportation system. So we have productivity decreases. We have issues with people literally wasting gasoline, sitting in congestion, and, of course, the money that people are spending to repair their vehicles as a result of poor infrastructure.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you. Well, Representative Hornstein, I mean, this is kind of like the data we're always fed about economic impact as well. That's pretty subjective to hard to accept a number like that. But even if you do accept that number by your own bill here, and I just did some quick math, if you take the cost of this over the biennium and divide it by the Minnesota population, that's just shy of $500 for every man, woman, and child of increased spending in this state. For a typical average family of four, that would be $2,000 a household against your $1,000 of savings that you're talking about. So those numbers just don't match. The other thing that's really troubling is, you know, if this is really one Minnesota, this schedule of how you're shifting the tab fees is really kind of crazy. I mean, you're talking about on the high-end size of a vehicle, over $650 for tab fees on a vehicle with a depreciation schedule that stays at 100% for the first 3 years of its life. And anybody who buys a car knows that value is not maintained at 100% of value in the first 3 years. But when you talk about fair progressivity in this bill, I mean, here we go down to $10, what some people are going to be paying to renew their tab fees. I think people generally drive an average amount of miles per year. This is not in any means a fair application of collecting money. This is collecting money from the few and redistributing it all across the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hey, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, are there any
That's okay.
Are there any fare increases for transit riders in your bill?
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, we just had a fare increase within the last couple of years, and so we maintain the fare box recovery rate, which is roughly one-third of the cost of the transit system. What you have, Mr. Chair and Representative Scott, whenever we increase fares, and again, there was a relatively recently a fare increase, you know, you lose riders, and it takes a while to regain that ridership. I think that it's natural that we would raise fares periodically. I don't oppose that, but we just did that. I don't think it's necessary to do that again.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And so, Representative Hornstein, if we lose riders when we raise those rates, I don't think that's a good excuse for not raising them when they need to be, but it seems to me that this bill seems to be shifting a lot of the cost to people that are driving motor vehicles, some of which have no option to even use transit, and I know you're trying to fix that too, but it seems to me that this is particularly hard on people that live in rural Minnesota that have to drive a lot. And it seems like we're leaving rural Minnesota out of the picture on a lot of the DFL bills this year, and it seems like the push is to get them all to move towards the metro area. And I don't think that's good for Minnesota, and those, I guess, are just my comments, and I can't support the bill in its present form. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I just briefly respond to Representative Scott? Just two quick points. I think it's quite the opposite in terms of the greater Minnesota impacts of this bill, both for roads and transit. As you know, there's sometimes some legitimate concern among metro legislators on both sides of the aisle related to how the funding formula works for roads and bridges. And I'm not here to start World War III, and I'm not, you know, we don't want to change that formula. But many argue that you know, that formula does benefit greater Minnesota. And we have seen tremendous support for the Corridors of Commerce program in greater Minnesota, which gets $300 million of bonding for projects like Highway 14, Highway 23, the I-94 corridor. These are projects that benefit greater Minnesota. I think the funding formula benefits greater Minnesota. And on transit, greater Minnesota, it's not just metro transit. We need transit throughout the state. We have many communities in greater Minnesota where senior citizens and others don't have transportation options and need support for greater Minnesota. And in the metro area, even if you're not a transit rider, you benefit by having less people on the roads. You benefit from cleaner air. There are many benefits to public transportation for society as a whole, not just for transit riders. So I just wanted to make that point. But in terms of greater Minnesota benefiting from this bill, it truly is a one Minnesota bill. And I believe that particularly in the road and bridge funding parts of this legislation, there will see tremendous benefits to areas outside of the metro area.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Garofalo, I understand you'd like to make a few concluding comments.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hornstein, just one quick question for you. On page 37 of the bill, line 4 through 20, Specifically the line on 37.18 through 37.20. It says, for the purposes of this calculation in this paragraph, the population of Hennepin County must be multiplied by 0.2, and the population of Ramsey County must be multiplied by 0.35. What is that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, this relates to the motor vehicle lease sales tax. When we passed the transportation bill in 2008, there was provision that the metro counties, excluding Hennepin and Ramsey, would get a portion of the metro vehicle or the MVLST sales tax and the motor vehicle lease sales tax. And I think there was some legitimate concern in Hennepin and Ramsey that they were not included in this. And so this year we do include them. The reason we have this population rubric is that if we had apportioned this money in the same way we currently apportion it to the other counties, Dakota, Washington, Anoka, et cetera, it would have been a tremendous amount of money, given the fact that Hennepin and Ramsey have such a higher proportion of population. So we had to adjust that for those two counties so that, you know, they would not be getting a extraordinarily high proportion of that revenue. I think Mr. Lee could probably amplify that as well if I didn't explain it clearly enough.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, so the metropolitan counties, because of the motor vehicle lease sales tax changes in the bill, would see a increase from their current allocation of about $15 million once the phase-in is complete after the first fiscal year. And the growth of that would largely go to bringing the two counties that weren't currently in the distribution in, but the percentages work such that all of the other five counties would essentially not have a reduction but would get about the same as what they were getting before and a slight increase in the tails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Hornstein. That's kind of what I thought it did, so we'll continue that conversation on the House floor. Mr. Representative Hornstein, I do want to compliment you on one thing. You didn't increase the electric vehicle surcharge in this bill, so I want to thank you personally for that. I think it's the one tax I don't think you did raise. But I do, members, want to provide a real-world example of the consequences of high taxes and the financial incentive for tax avoidance. A coworker of mine lives in rural Wisconsin, just across the border, and is in the process about a month ago of purchasing a small tractor, like a front end loader on it for clearing their driveway. They have a large lot. And in the process of the negotiations with the dealer they were buying it from, so it does not qualify under the motor vehicle sales tax. This is actually subject to our sales tax. In the process of those negotiations, the dealer, who was selling this from Washington County, suggested to my coworker that they deliver that item to their house. And as a result of doing that, it would reduce the purchase price by 2%. Because that's the separation and the difference between the sales tax in Washington County and this rural county in Wisconsin. And so in the state of Minnesota, we don't lose out on that 2%. We lose out on the entire transaction. And that's exactly what my coworker did. He had this transferred. I had this delivered to him so he would pay the sales tax at his house as opposed to purchasing in the state of Minnesota. And on these taxes and fees, time and time again, as we make things more expensive, we are providing a financial incentive for people to engage in legal tax avoidance. It's legal, it's lawful, you can do it, but we are continuing to provide more financial incentives for more people in East Grand Forks to register their vehicles in North Dakota. This is already happening right now. For these sales tax transactions to be orchestrated so they take place outside of our state, and ultimately this results in less revenue and puts our businesses that are selling many of these products at a competitive disadvantage. For this and other reasons, I would urge a no vote on this bill and ask my colleagues to join me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And a roll call has been requested. Representative Hornstein renews his motion that House File 1555, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Tax Committee. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Albright?
No.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Davids. Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Representative Juskowski. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Hansen.
Yes.
Representative Hausman.
Yes.
Representative Hertas.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative Kreisha.
No.
Representative Liebling.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative Long.
Yes.
Representative Mariani. Representative Marquardt. Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Neuer.
Yes.
Representative Pawlowski.
Yes.
Representative Poppy.
Aye.
Representative Schumacher.
No.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Torkelson.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes.
Okay, being 16 ayes and 9 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is on its way to taxes. I would like to, before we go to the next bill, however, acknowledge we do have the Commissioner of Transportation present in the audience, and one of the reasons I want to acknowledge her, she's the former Speaker of the House, but maybe almost as important, she was a member of this committee at one time. So, she is in the audience as well. We also have another former member from the other side of the aisle, Marty Seifert, who was the minority leader and sat on this committee as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert
did I miss somebody?
No, I just wanted to comment on the record that Representative Seifert probably did the best transportation-related filibuster in the history of the Minnesota House of Representatives, I think, sometime
sure
in 2007. So I enjoyed it very much and learned quite a bit.
I'm just reminded that we also have former Senator John Harrington in the audience as well, and he's also Commissioner of Public Safety. Somewhere. Oh, there he is, up at the top. Okay, very good. Thank you for being here, and thank you, Representative Hornstein. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, we were going to have a slight change in the agenda due to the timeliness of processing the bills up in the revisor's office. We need to take the jobs bill up now. And so the chair will moves that House File 2208, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. And members, we had a thorough discussion of this yesterday. If you recall, I indicated it was going to taxes and that it would be coming back here. And the only change is the provision that dealt with the tax issue was then removed in taxes, and so now the bill is before us and no tax provisions are in it, and it will go to the general register with the chair's motion. So any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We now go to the housing bill, Housing Finance Representative Hausman, House File 1151. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Housing Finance and Policy Division Report for House File 1151.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hausman.
And I have a second motion. Is that correct?
I move
that House File 1151, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay. The motion is before us, and if you would, let's see, do we have an amendment here? Oh, no amendment. There's no amendments on this bill, then. So if you could explain the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, we have updated statistics from the Minnesota Housing Partnership that say that more than one in four, or 572,000 households in Minnesota, pay more than they can afford for housing. That number has grown by nearly 26,000 households from 2015 to 2017. Similarly, the Wilder Foundation's release of their report shows that from 2015 to 2018, 3 years, homelessness in Minnesota has gone up a whopping 10%, 9% in the metro and 13% in rural areas. And one of the reasons it's higher, I believe, in rural areas is the aging population, because the growing group of those who are homeless are over 55. With those statistics in mind, I turn to House File 1151, which provides appropriations for the MHFA budget totaling $26 million over the biennium, with $10 million of that as one-time spending. I would have hoped for maybe three times that, but given the nature of the times, we do acknowledge this amount. Many of these programs have bipartisan support in my committee, and there are bipartisan co-authors on the bill. While there's a great need for access to affordable housing across the state, this bill is a start to addressing the systemic issues facing our state. We provide appropriations over base for programs addressing workforce housing, rental assistance for people with mental illness, stable housing for students experiencing homelessness, among others. I'd like to call out just a couple of people for special thanks. Representative Gunther has had a long history with the Challenge Program. He is, again, the author of that this year, and that is in this bill. The Challenge Program was created in 1999 to address the workforce housing shortage across the state, and so we are carrying that forward. I'm also grateful for the hundreds of groups and thousands of people through the Homes for All Coalition who have been telling the story over the last few years and making the need so clear to so many of us. You just see a huge amount of conversation about this. Mr. Chair, it's a very short bill. You have both a research and spreadsheet before you. I don't know if you do. You want the fiscal analyst to go through the spreadsheet?
I think only if there's questions. If you want to come forward, and Representative Garofalo, you're on the list to wrap up. I don't know if there's anybody else. Any?
I think we can probably just move around.
Representative Graffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The budget target for this committee is $26 million above base. It's a 25% increase from the base target. Regardless of how the money is spent on some good items, this is a bill that is financed primarily by tax increases. I would ask members to oppose this bill and vote no, but I do look forward to working on the issue, particularly with the Homework Starts at Home initiative that's in this program. Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Hausman renews. Oh, that's right. We're going to lay this one over for this one's going to be combined with A.
Yes.
So I'll just temporarily lay the bill over. Very good. I was getting ahead of the game.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We now have Representative Poppy with the Ag bill, and this one will be, these two will be combined. So, Representative Poppy, do you have a motion?
Yes, I'd like to move adoption of the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division Report for House File 2200.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Poppy?
I move that House File 2200, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. And this one, there's no amendments either. Okay, if you'd like to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The mission of the Minnesota Department of Ag is to enhance Minnesotans' quality of life by ensuring the integrity of our food supply, the health of our environment, and the strength of our agricultural economy. The ag budget is less than 1% of the state budget, but ag as an industry or enterprise supports more than 430,000 jobs and generates $112 billion in economic activity. Before us today is House File 2200, the Ag and Food Finance Division bill, which meets the target, which overall was $7.6 million over base. Three entities are funded with this bill: the Minnesota Department of Ag, the Board of Animal Health, and AURI, which is the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. There are four articles of the bill. Article 1 is the ag budget, which funds the core functions of the MDA, Board of Animal Health, and AURI. The budget reflects the priorities of the Department of Ag and with some adjustments to reflect the priorities of committee members. This funding bill allows MDA the ability to be responsive and supportive of traditional conventional ag, as well as promoting opportunities to grow new markets and trade. It provides MDA the ability to be responsive to the critical issues facing the ag sector and farmers, including rural mental health, increasing the number of meat inspectors, and dealing with ag emergencies like African swine fever. It also provides protection and support in areas of agriculture, horticulture, and natural resources by funding the Minnesota Department of Ag Laboratory with immediate funds and ongoing dollars. And it provides advancement in research within the Minnesota Department of Ag and the University of Minnesota, important to the future of ag and biosciences. The second article of the bill deals with chronic wasting disease. The Board of Animal Health is responsible for the farm cervidae, which are deer, elk, and other cervids that are farmed contained within the state. CWD is a disease that threatens our valued hunting and agricultural heritage. The spread of CWD yields concerns about economic sustainability of both hunting and farming. It's a part of this bill because the Board of Animal Health is a responsible agency for cervidae farms. Much of our discussion in committee was centered around a base bill, which was Representative Becker Finn's bill, but we wanted to really work on trying to find the balance of the concern for the deer farmers who are in the enterprise of being cervidae farms, as well as the concerns of our deer farmers and the natural resources within our state. Articles 3 and 4 are for the grain buyers and grain warehouses, and those come from recommendations from the Grain Advisory Task Force. Representative Paul Anderson carried that bill. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Savory is also my fiscal analyst, so if you want him to be able to come forward and talk about change items, he would be available to do that.
Forward, and we'll see if there are questions. Any discussion on the bill? Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Chair Poppe, for bringing the bill forward. And we had quite a discussion on a few of these articles, and some of the things that we still, as far as the Republican caucus, still have concerns on, I'd like to bring up and address this once again. You talked about Article 2 and Section 7 of Article 2 around CWD and the mandatory herd depopulation, specifically on lines 39.24, to where a farm cervidae herd tests positive, the entire herd must be euthanized. And that's at owner's expense. There's no language around indemnification or compensation for that. And hearing the testimony from the cervidae farmers, that's extremely concerning around that. In that same article where some confusion came in, and that is on page 40, line 4, before signing an agreement to sell or transfer the property, the owner of a premises where chronic wasting disease is detected must disclose in writing to the buyer or transferee. And where the confusion came in is whether or not that specifically pertains to a farm where the cervidae is raised, or if deer is harvested in the wild and it tests positive for CWD. I know we spoke to that issue. However, there's still a lot of concerns on how that language is stated in the bill. The other concern that we brought up and had amendment to address is the mandate to do the testing on research on community solar, mandating what the Center for Rural Policy and Development must do. And there's many issues around that. I mean, one of the statements that were brought up specifically to this, because it is very leading on what those findings should be. And basically, it's tying the hands. One, it's mandating what the center should be researching. But two, it's tying the hands on what their findings will be. And if either party starts mandating what the center should be doing, It could become very, very political in a very short period of time. And what was brought up in committee is that the center's name then could be changed, whether it's the Center for Republican Policy or Development or the Center for Democratic Policy and Development. So I don't believe that's an area that path that we want to head down. Capable people within the center, and I know that they send out surveys and they have board members all across the state that will determine what they're going to be studying. The other concern is that there's no language to fund the Turf Seed Council. I know that you did say that you're working on this and trying to find where those dollars are going to come from, but currently we do not have the Turf Seed Council funded here. The other item, as it pertains to AFRAC, I know Representative Paul Anderson spoke to this about having that extended to what AFRAC Council actually asked us to do was 10 years. There's only a 5-year extension on this, and like Representative Anderson said, we need that longevity of the council when you start doing research on phosphorus initiatives and others. You stated in your opening statement about the budget being less than 1%, and you're absolutely right. You and I both know that we have a very, very small budget, but what was also brought up in committee is that we wish within the jurisdiction of the Agriculture Finance Committee that we could do more for dairy farmers. And so those concerns were raised as well. So for those reasons, I'll be voting no on this bill, and I ask that others do the same. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Any other discussion? Seeing none, we have a couple of motions, Representative Hamilton, before the bill would come up for a final vote. Would you like to wait until we come up to a final vote? We're going to combine this and housing.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would like to have the vote on this separately, and I'm not sure when we'd be able to do that, versus unless there's going to be a roll call on housing as well. But I would like a vote on this bill.
I don't anticipate there's one, but let me finesse that a bit. It does kind of put things a bit out of order, but your motion, we would have to have, Representative Houseman was going to make a motion to combine, so we would have to.
Mr. Chair, I'll make that motion.
Pardon?
I'll make that motion. I would like to move to amend House File 2200 by incorporating the language contained in House File 1151 as amended as a separate article.
Okay, that motion is before us. And any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion carried. Representative Poppe renews her motion then that House File 2200 as amended be recommended to be placed on the General Registrar. And then we also have to add some language that staff be directed to make technical corrections and amend the title. So that would be included in the motion. Now, we did have a roll call requested, Representative Hamilton, how would you like to proceed?
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking for some guidance, I guess, from you as well, because I wanted to vote on the ag bill. And I know now that it's combined, I don't know if there's a way that we can get a clean vote on that or not, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm looking for your direction on that as well.
There's no way.
Well, let me consult for a moment here. You've raised kind of a complicated issue, being that these are combined.
On the bus.
Oh, that's
interesting.
That was the first thing I
It's going to take several motions to unravel the situation. Representative Hausman?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess my knowledge of parliamentary procedure is there is no way, because if we did, that would mean final passage of that. Then we'd have to vote to reconsider. We'd have to have a motion to reconsider. So I think the only way we can proceed really in a clean way is for you to make your final amendment with that language and then have final vote on the bill.
Well, the question before us, and I'm not sure if a roll call is requested at this point or not, is the combined bill. We would have to unravel several things in consultation with Mr. Sullivan and Mr. Marks. You will have an opportunity to represent Hamilton to maybe raise the question on the floor. Representative Garofalo, do you have any advice on how to handle this?
Well, first of all, we appreciate you being accommodating in this. There actually is a way to do this. What we could do is we could take the Hausman bill and offer the agriculture bill as an amendment. We would have a roll call vote on that. And at that point, I don't think that bill is going to be going anywhere. You can just dispense it and leave it in the committee. Then you can come back to the ag bill that has the housing finance amended onto it and pass that out as the still as your vehicle and author.
And we'd have to eliminate, but we've got a motion before us on the combined. I don't want to do that. Representative Hamilton, you had your hand up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if we're willing to do what Representative Garofalo stated, I would withdraw my roll call and just ask Representative Garofalo to repeat what he recommended.
Mr. Sullivan had a suggestion. Would you care to review what your suggestion was?
Mr. Chair and members, my suggestion was similar to Representative Garofalo's, and it similar to what Representative Hausman mentioned as well. If she withdrew her motion to do the combination, members voted, or if she just withdrew her motion or reconsidered, was her motion adopted?
It was adopted.
It was. Yeah. Okay, if it was, then there need to be move to reconsider that vote, and then Representative Poppy could renew her motion to send the ag bill to the general register. There could be a recorded roll call vote on that motion, and then there could be another motion to reconsider that vote, and then redo the process of combining the two bills. A similar thing happened 3 or 4 years ago on the jobs bill when it was combined with a couple of other bills in this committee.
Members, I've been here for a number of years. I've never quite had this situation before. thank you, Mr. Hamilton. Representative Hamilton. Representative Liebling. On the question of procedure.
Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to weigh in. Well, I can appreciate that Representative Hamilton wants a recorded vote on one piece. I just would remind the committee that, on the supplemental budget that we had in the last year, some of us might have wanted to have a separate vote. This comes up all the time. Members have to vote for stuff in bills that go together. And, it's just kind of the nature of the beast. In fact, there's probably not one omnibus bill that a member says, yeah, I love this whole bill, and there isn't a piece I'd like to vote on separately. I just feel like it's a lot to ask, and we should just go ahead and take the vote. And on the floor, if a member wants to, offer an amendment on a certain part of the bill, they certainly have the option, can get their vote that way. But I just think that to kind of try to do all these parliamentary gyrations so that a member can have a vote that the member wants is kind of not really sensible.
Representative Thornton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little surprised that Representative Liebling is bringing up last year's activity, because of my understanding was that the new majority was going to avoid that sort of behavior. Perhaps this would be a good time to start a discussion on the single subject clause. I won't do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair and members, it might be helpful for the audience watching why we're doing this. In the Senate, their committee is Ag and Housing. I mean, there's a reason why we're putting these two together. In the Senate, their committee is Ag and Housing. That's why we just did this.
Okay, any further discussion? Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did make that motion for a roll call before the two bills were combined. And so, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if we can just go back and ask for the roll call to combine the two bills, and therefore we'd be able to get a vote on the agriculture bill separately.
Mr. Sullivan, can you make your suggestion again? That is a good point. The roll call was requested before I combined them. I do want to honor that part of the discussion. I'm trying to be as fair as possible, and you did. I'll acknowledge that you did make that request, and I probably should have entertained that before I combined them or asked for the motion to combine. So, Mr. Sullivan, what was your suggestion based on what was historically done?
Mr. Chair and members, based on the practice from a couple years back in this committee, the process from this point would be for Representative Hausman's motion to be reconsidered. So someone would move to reconsider that motion to combine the two bills. And then Representative Poppy would renew her motion to send House File 2200 to the General Register. Members would vote, roll call on that, and then there'd be another motion to reconsider that vote.
Okay, Representative Hausman, would you be willing to make that motion? Representative Teblin, you had your hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say that, you know, my understanding was that when Representative Hamilton asked for a roll call, there really wasn't a motion on the table to ask for a roll call on, and there was some discussion about that very fact. So I think it's a bit revisionist to say I had asked for a roll call on this, on that. You know, he explained that he wanted a roll call on the ag bill, and I think the chair explained that, in fact, that probably wasn't going to be available. So I guess I stand with Representative Hausman in not wanting to go back and redo all of this.
It doesn't look like we're heading down the road of reconsideration, Representative Hamilton. I think we'll just have to vote on the issue that's before us. The motion before us at this point was the one Representative Poppy then renewed her motion that House File 2200 as amended be recommended placed on the General Register staff be directed to make technical corrections and amend the title. Representative Hamilton, did you want a roll call on this then, or not? No? Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
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 Motion carried. We now have Representative Hansen's bill before us. Representative Hansen. There's always a new wrinkle in parliamentary procedural. Okay, Representative Hansen, would you get him when you get settled in there? Move the division report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I would move adoption of the Environment and Natural Resources Division Report for House File 2209.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move that House File 2209, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And I do have a couple authors' amendments.
Yeah, the motion is before us, and let's take the author's amendment first. That would be the A-26.
I would move the A-26 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Representative Hansen, would you care to explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A-26 amendment are corrections that were discovered by our nonpartisan staff that needed to be done. And so these are technical in nature. I have Mr. Hagemeyer, Liz Taylor here, if you have any questions about them.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. We have the A-27 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'd move the A-27 amendment.
The motion is before us. If you'd care to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A-27 amendment is Representative Purcell's policy bill. And as Representative Hausman mentioned of how things are lined up in the Senate, we're putting this policy bill in because in the Senate they have combined ag or the environment finance, environment policy, the LCCMR, and the lands bill into one bill. And I want to try to keep the LCCMR separate, but I do want to try to match up somewhat with the Senate. So we're putting in the policy bill that went through the process from Representative Purcell. It includes several bills that were heard and moved. It's the DNR policy bill plus several bills that have been combined into that. House File 1886 from Sandell, House File 1880 from Sandsteed, House File 1587 from me, House File 1472 from Claflin. You may remember Representative Tabke's dog leash bill, and then it also has Representative Cagle's wildlife stamp design, and then Representative Lee's use of neonicotinoids on wildlife management areas.
See any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We have a third amendment, the A-28 amendment. Representative Dabney?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A-28. Members, there's language in this bill that establishes a process where any future forecasted surpluses would go through a waterfall of uses, and one would be the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust. In the K-12 finance bill, there's a similar language from the committee chair that would support special education funding and getting that to the same 90-10 cycle that we do the rest of the education bill. This amendment simply says the special education provision would be first of the two provisions when the reviser amends that section of statute. I'd ask for your support.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Hansen on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, to the bill as amended. The budget target for the Environment and Natural Resources Division was $356.787 million, which is a $32.558 million increase from the base. That is the same amount as the governor's budget request. We do some of the things that the governor requested, but we also make some changes. I believe you have in your packet a list of the bills as they were introduced and included, a page and line of the description and the authors of those provisions. So if you're looking for that, you will see that in your packet. This bill for the Pollution Control Agency protects firefighters by banning flame retardant chemicals, has a study for managed aquifer recharge, develops a training, improves the training program for feedlot curriculum, it establishes the rusty patch bumblebee as the state bee, it provides for enhanced blood testing, lead testing efforts, asthma education recommended by the Northern Metals consent decree, It helps with reducing the amount of road salt. It provides help for small businesses by reimbursing dry cleaners for their cleanup costs. It reduces the amount of carpet in our landfills by creating a carpet product stewardship program. It reinstates the Pollution Control Agency Citizens Board. For the Department of Natural Resources, it gets more kids involved by creating the No Child Left Inside grant program. It provides for a forest carbon sequestration goal, provides grants for the first time for cities for Emerald Ash Borer quarantine to help take down some of those trees, and provided for debris removal from Roberts Lake. It does increase the watercraft surcharge and the AIS surcharge that are not in the general fund, and it provides consistent long-term funding for the Aquatic Invasive Research Center at the University of Minnesota. It provides funding for local ATV trails, renames St. Croix State Park the Walter Mondale State Park, and bans the interstate trade of ivory, prohibiting the commercial harvest of turtles and requiring lead shot after non-toxic shot after July 1st in some wildlife management areas. For the Board of Water and Soil Resources, it includes the governor's recommendation for operating adjustment, funding of critical IT repairs and cybersecurity, and for an increase in services. It does create a lawns to legumes grant program. It provides for one-time incentive for enrollees in the Federal Conservation Reserve program. It reduces the amount of plastic in conservation materials, provides a state action plan for soil health, and an additional $3.5 million each year for grants to soil and water conservation districts. It has full funding for the Minnesota Zoo, including replacing some of their obsolete communication and security. It has funding for the Explore Minnesota Tourism with an additional dollars for the Office of Outdoor Recreation. And it should be noted that the ATV accounts are related to the gas tax. If without the gas tax, some of the funding does not come to the ATV. In addition, in the tax bill, there will be additional funding for soil and water conservation districts and some of the solid waste initiatives money for SCORE grants that are being raised with a fee on solid waste. And that is the bill as amended.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, I had an email from my soil and water conservation district yesterday talking about a cut in funding. I guess they, you know, I don't sit on your committee, but they're telling me that traditionally they've been given the appropriation was $14 million a year, and that's being cut to 13.5. Is that correct? And I know you mentioned something about maybe being in the tax bill, so if you could elaborate on that, sure. That'd be helpful.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Scott, so what's happened the last 4 years is there has been $11 million a year that were taken from the Clean Water Fund to go to general services grants to soil and water conservation districts at about $100K per district across the state. So that is one-time money that has been appropriated from the Clean Water Fund. And actually this year in the Clean Water Fund, there's also been the sweep. We just talked about, Representative Dabney had that amendment about sweeping general fund when there's a surplus. That $22 million last year, because there was a surplus in November, that $22 million went back into the Clean Water Fund for appropriation this year. So there's been $11 million. The soil and water districts want $14 million a year. The governor's budget did not include that. And it isn't base funding because clean water money is every 2 years. It's every two-year appropriation. So the governor proposed providing taxing authority to soil and water conservation districts. We heard bills on that. Within the target that I had, I appropriate $3.5 million. So, yes, that is less than $11 million. But it is in there. And then in the tax committee, when you rate the solid waste fee currently is distributed at a 70%, 30%. 70% goes into the environmental fund and 30% goes into the general fund. So we capture that 30% that goes to the general fund and then dedicate that ongoing to the soil and water conservation districts. So that will climb, that will be ongoing funding, three and a half, four and a half as solid waste grows over time. We also put in there a requirement that the counties match that, if we're giving them the money there, that it match it. Now, right now, I think that matching requirement might be getting taken out in the tax bill. But so we're providing two sources of money. One is the one-time money from the general fund at $3.5 million, and then the ongoing solid waste money. What the Senate is proposing is going back and taking it again from the Clean Water Fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for that explanation, Representative Hansen. I do have another question.
Okay, Representative Scott.
I noticed in the bill that you're reinstating the MPCA Citizens Board, and I'm wondering if you could point to me on the spreadsheet where the line item is for the funding for that. I understand there was a $669,000 fiscal note.
Madam, Mr. Chair, if Mr. Hagemeyer could mention that, it's complicated.
Okay, Mr. Hagemeyer, if you could identify yourself.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'm Brad Hagemeyer with the House Fiscal Analysis Department. The reinstatement of the MPCA Citizens Board relates back to 2015 when it was repealed. At that point, there was no money captured as savings. There's no appropriation reduction to MPCA for the cost of operating the board. The same bill that is included in this bill in 2016 was fiscal noted as not having a cost. The agency could absorb it at that point, so there wasn't any funds included this time for the reinstatement of the MPCA Citizens Board, even though there was a fiscal note that showed a higher cost.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Was the Representative Torkelson next? You wanted to go last. Okay. Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you. And
I'm trying to go by order, and I have
sure.
Representative Torkelson's name on the list.
Yeah, understood. He's more important than I am. Just a
election certificate. So.
Just a question on section Article 2, Section 56, trying to understand the flame retardant chemicals prohibition. As I'm looking through this, I know there's been lots of discussion about all the stakeholders and whether or not there was agreement, but what I'm specifically wondering, and if you can just help me, on lines 89.18 through 89.24. So I understand the intent is to ban the PFAS materials because of some of the harmful effects they may have to firefighters. However, I also understand that those are the materials that best put out the oil as well as petroleum types of fires that we might find at refineries, airports, and so forth. I'm assuming, and I want to ask before I assume too far, this also includes they would use these materials during an oil spill for a train. Would that be correct?
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kreshaw. I think if you look at the technical amendment, I don't know if you're looking at on 89.18, look on the A26 amendment.
Sure.
And that's probably the better language. A manufacturer wholesale may not manufacture, sell, offer for sale, distribute or sale or distribute for use in the state class of B fire foam that contains intentionally added PFAS except for use by oil refineries, oil and petroleum terminals, and airports. And I believe, if my memory is correct, in the testimony in committee that that included fighting, I mean, that oil would be inclusive. So if you're dealing with oil, an oil spill, oil train, because you don't want to be adding water, that you're still having that use, if I remember the testimony correctly.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Okay, and so I think I understand that. So we are still going to allow for this material to be used because it's the best substance to put fire out. And this is my just understanding that I want to make sure I understand that in practicality. On line 89.22 to 89.24, we say in here, Class B firefighting foam that contains these should not be or must not be used in training exercises. So here's my question. In Camp Ripley, they simulate these oil spills all the time. And then they start the fire and they have all this. My question is, are these materials going to be available in case the training exercise gets out of hand, or is it not going to be around at all? I'm just trying to avoid a situation. And the other thing is, because it's on Camp Ripley, does that not apply?
just trying to understand what could possibly go wrong and make sure we don't put something in place here where something gets out of hand and they don't have the ability to deal with it. So not just more of a question, and maybe you can look at that and work on that language or make sure that that's being addressed properly.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kreisha, that particular question I don't believe did come up, so I would like to work with you on that to make sure we can make sure it's as clear as possible because we want to make sure that people are safe.
And Mr. Chair, living 5 miles from that, that's extremely important to me.
Okay, I think it's Representative Farquharson now then. Representative Farquharson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. I was asked by Representative Garofalo to kind of fill in for him since he's not in the room, so it has nothing to do with my importance in relation to Senator Kreisha.
No, I said
Senator,
I'll have
I say Senator, Representative Kreisha. Thank you for that, Mr. Chair. A few points before I ask folks to vote no. I don't know, has a roll call been requested on this bill?
Not at this point.
I would like to request the roll call, Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been requested.
Now, first, the issue of Soil and Water Conservation District funding. You know, this goes back a long ways in state government. We've had a partnership between state government and local government to fund our SWCDs. It's a little bit uneven and bumpy across the state, but still that commitment by the state has always been there. The governor failed to address it in his budget proposal. He instead suggested a levy authority for the local Soil and Water Conservation Districts. That is really more of a local-local partnership rather than a local-state partnership. This bill does not address Soil and Water Conservation Districts adequately, and I would hope that we work towards making sure they are properly funded on the state side of that commitment. The Citizens Board issue is an interesting one. I no longer serve on environment, but I was on environment at the time when this this board was eliminated as a result of some very intense negotiations involving a number of other issues. I realize you can't bind a future legislature, but this seems to have a bit of flavor of going back on a reasonable deal that was made at the time. The issue of finding a state park to put a name on is been quite interesting. Nothing against former Vice President Walter Mondale, but it hasn't gone very well. First, it was supposed to go on Interstate State Park, and apparently that didn't happen. I wasn't in on the negotiations there, but apparently for some reason that was abandoned. Now we've moved to St. Croix State Park. I don't think that's really been fully vetted and deserves a little more attention, perhaps a bit of delay. And the very interesting part of this bill is there are a number of funding provisions that are based contingent on other changes in other bills and other parts of state law where the funding is only available if other funding changes are made. I don't know that I've ever seen that in bill form before. I realize we talk about those sorts of issues a lot, but to actually put that in language of the bill seems to be an unusual process. Getting back to the Citizens Board briefly, there certainly would be a cost for the Citizens Board if it were reinstated. I don't think those costs have been addressed in this bill, and if that would happen, the money has to come from somewhere. I don't know if we're just expecting PCA to just swallow those rather substantial costs or not. And finally, Mr. Chair, we had discussions early this session that there wasn't going to be a lot of policy in our bills that relate to finance. This bill contains tons of policy. That apparently we have abandoned that effort to restrict the amount of policy in our budget bills. Mr. Chair, I urge members to vote no.
Okay, thank you. And any further discussion? Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do see, echoing Representative Torkelson, I see all kinds of policy in the bill that you, Mr. Chair, had said on the House floor we were not going to have in these bills, but apparently someone with a higher pay grade made a decision differently than you did. I'm not sure. I'd be interested, Mr. Chair, in your comments around that. And then for the author of the bill, do we know, I see all kinds of new fee increases in your fee increases are taxes, as our statutes clearly say. Included in here, of course, is a fee increase for a license to own a boat of 19 feet or less in this state, 45% increase in that tax for all Minnesotans, it appears. So, Representative Hansen, I'd be curious, what is the total amount of new fees in the bill, and what is the total amount of fee increases in the bill?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Drazkowski. $15.865 million over the biennium.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, that's the total of the new fees in the bill and the fee increases, I assume. Is there a list of all of those in a spreadsheet for the committee?
Mr. Chair, I'd have Mr. Hagemeyer the third-party validation of the accuracy of those numbers.
Mr. Chair, if you guys are handed out a spreadsheet for this bill, the Environment Natural Resources Finance tracking sheet dated April 8th, 2019 at 1:47 p.m. Starting at the bottom of page 5, you'll see the revenue and transfers, all the fee increase revenues, basically negatives denote a new revenue, or negative numbers denote a new revenue coming in. Positive numbers would be a lost revenue. Some are just transfers or accounting purposes on here, but the new fees are all listed there. The majority of that $15 million is, as you said, the voting increases, which were on line 303. You'll see the increase for the registrations of boats, the three-year registration, but it's $5.89 million. And then you'll see on line 300 the aquatic invasive species surcharge, which accounts for about $8 million of the revenue. So most of the revenue are contained in the watercraft surcharges, as you mentioned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'll save my critique of the outrageous policy provisions in the bill for the House floor. But, Mr. Chair, your comments on the proliferation of policy and not only this bill but the rest of the omnibus bills, which is contrary to your comments on the House floor a week or two ago.
Just to inform members, there have been discussions about the alignment of various bills with the Senate. And so some of what you see happening with these motions with alignment are a result of negotiations with the Senate. And I think when Representative Hansen made the amendment to this bill, he pointed out that that was to align with the Senate bill to create some ease of putting things together in conference committee. So that's the answer to the question. It was negotiations with the Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question for Representative Hansen.
Representative
Drazkowski. Thank you. Representative Hansen, could you characterize where the CWD legislation is? Is it in this bill, or is there a policy bill coming?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski, there is a $4.4 million appropriated in this bill, and then there is language relating to that on how that should be spent. We take $500,000 each year of that 4.4. The governor's recommendation was 4.4. It's on page 28 of the bill. And if you look at 28.26, so that's the CWD language, and we change the governor's recommendation a couple ways. We create the Adopt a Dumpster program and direct the DNR to work with the PCA on developing guidelines for managing carcass disposal, and then we appropriate $500,000 each year to the chronic waste and disease initiative that's going on at the University of Minnesota. So that's the Chronic Waste and Disease Response Research and Policy Program, and that's on page 29. And the language about the Adopt the Dumpster and directing the guidelines, I believe, is near the end of the bill. That's on starts on page 90.7 is the language that that describes those appropriations.
So, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen, did you address the Antler Point restrictions in southeast Minnesota as part of the CWD
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Drazkowski, it is not in this bill, but I believe it is in the Senate bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hey, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, I'd like to direct your attention to page 63 of the bill. And it is Section 35 referring to non-toxic shot required for taking small game. In Subdivision 1 in bold, first line, it says non-toxic shot on wildlife management areas in agricultural zone. Then Subdivision 2 refers to farmland zone. And for the purpose of this section, the farmland zone is a portion of the state, and it gives a description of where that is. Is Subdivision 2 reference to farmland zone referring specifically to Subdivision 1 as the agricultural zone?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas, yes, because it would, if you look on 63.5, then you see the cross-reference with farmland zone. So I think it, I would agree with you, it probably would be clearer if 63.3 said farmland zone, but 63.5 does say within the farmland zone. I think farmland zone and subdivision 2 is the descriptive. And Mr. Hagemeyer, is that correct?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. Yeah, I do think it would make more sense in 63.3 to call that the farmland zone or refer to the other two as agricultural zone, so there's not any lack of clarity about what you're trying to say there.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas, I think the motion when we finally move this will have the technical corrections language, so I would think that that could be a technical correction, Mr. Sullivan.
Would that work? Would you consider that technical?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, if that's okay with the committee members, that's certainly a change that we could make in consultation with the reviser.
And that'll be part of the final motion to do the technical part of it. So, Representative Hertas, did you have anything more?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That ends my questions for now.
Okay, we have Representative Torkelson. I had you down for the wrap-up. Is that part of the same, or?
I'm working on it, Mr. Chair. I would like to.
Well, I thought you did the wrap-up already.
Well,
you're recognized, Representative.
Well, thank you. We'll wrap up the wrap-up, I guess, if that's okay with you. An issue that I did miss in my earlier comments, and perhaps President Dabney can help me with this, but on Section 54 of the bill, there is a outdoor recreation office created within Explore Minnesota Tourism. And as I understand it, that bill had a fiscal note of $12.8 million for the biennium, yet the financial portion of this is really not addressed in this bill. I understand that the department, DNR, was not enamored with your proposal, and neither was the Explore Minnesota Tourism Office. There is a substantial amount of money involved here, a substantial reorganization of the environment, Explore Minnesota Tourism, a department that really could have gone to GovOps as a result of those substantial changes. It did not. And it seems like a very dramatic maneuver within this bill in relation to Explore Minnesota Tourism.
Any further discussion? Oh, Representative Dabney, I didn't see your hand go up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was waiting for Representative Torkelson to finish. Representative Torkelson, the absurd fiscal note, if you had looked at it, anticipated significant spending that was not authorized. And the language that is currently in this bill is meaningfully different from the bill as originally introduced that the fiscal note was based on. It envisions a planning year and the development of a plan, and so it doesn't authorize any of the spending that was attributed to the original version of the bill. What other states have done, and Minnesota is starting to fall behind on, is develop offices of outdoor recreation with multiple responsibilities, better engaging their state's residents and tourists, hence the Minnesota tourism, to be engaged in the outdoors, building job and business opportunities in the growing outdoor recreation market, and then working with particularly higher education institutions, such as in Minnesota, Vermilion Community College offers degrees in the industry so that they can complement the rich opportunities for outdoor recreation up in the Ely environment and beyond. So this is a vision for enhancing business opportunities as well as enhancing opportunities for people to recreate in our outdoors here in Minnesota that so defines us. I would hope that greater business opportunity in greater Minnesota would be something that you and I could agree on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Dabney. That certainly is something we can agree on, but the procedure and process by which you went about getting this particular issue inserted into this bill is something that I really don't think we could agree on. If the fiscal note was that far off, it should have been revised, and this bill should have gone to GovOps.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. So Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 2209, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register and staff be directed to make technical corrections and amend the title. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll take the roll.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Albright?
No.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Davids? Representative Dabney?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Representative Hamilton?
No.
Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Representative Hausman?
Yes.
Representative Hertas?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Kreisha?
No.
Representative Weebling? Representative Lilly, Representative Long?
Yes.
Representative Mariani?
Aye.
Representative Marquardt? Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Neuer?
Aye.
Representative Pawlowski?
Aye.
Representative Poppy?
Yes.
Representative Schumacher? Representative Scott? Representative Torkelson?
No.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative McGee?
Being 14 ayes and 8 nays, the bill is passed, so thank you. A couple of quick announcements before we adjourn. Originally, we planned to have a DFL discussion in 400 North. That's canceled for today. And tomorrow, we're scheduled to meet at 11 o'clock. But I would ask members to watch your emails. You know, we got that storm coming in, and they did change the start time for the House to 10 o'clock. So we'll stay with, at least at this point in time, with 11 o'clock, and if that changes, we'll email people as quickly as possible. So with that, nothing more before the committee, we're adjourned.